Thank you. Please sit.
Justice Jefferson is recused in this matter, and we are ready to hear arguments from the petitioner in Garza versus Garcia.
May it please the court, Ms. Sharon Howell will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. In the brief time I have this morning, I'd like to focus on the two principal venue issues that are presented and are central to this petition. First is the question of whether the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals legislated rather than adhering to the plain language of Section 15002B and C, both in its establishing a new rule for convenience transfers found nowhere in the statute, and second, in its reviewing convenience transfer, which is clearly and unequivocally forbidden by subsection C. The second issue involves the second ground for transfer stated in petitioner's motion for transfer, and that is transfer for an improper venue. And the question there is, did the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals err in its application or misapplication of the standard of review mandated by Section 15064B and interpreted by this court in Ruiz, in that it focused on the original county of suit as opposed to the ultimate county of suit, which was Hidalgo County. Turning first to the convenience transfer.
Well, let me ask you about that. How do you address their argument that under your position, someone could just put that in their motion, never urge it, the court never consider convenience, ignore the terms of the statute, but just because it's in there, you presume that it was a basis for the order. Is your response just too bad? Take it to
my response, is that, Your Honor, on that point, I was just about to say the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals got it all wrong with regard to Section 15002 B and C, but the one thing they got right was what you just said, because it is clear from the language of that section, subsections B and particularly subsection C, is what makes it totally discretionary with the trial court. So a convenience transfer, and while there may be requirements of certain factors for the trial court, I think they got it right.
You agree it could be subject to tremendous abuse, but that's the legislature's problem.
That's right. That's exactly, as we said in the brief, that's for the legislature to address. And right now, subsection C makes it totally discretionary.
What's the abuse? Can't the other side just say, please don't sign that, Judge?
Of course. And I think the legislature assumed that a trial court's not going to just arbitrarily and willy-nilly transfer for convenience. And this happens to be just a
really?
Well, I would
I
say...
I mean, if they can transfer it and it's completely unreviewable...
You don't see it very often.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let's talk about abuse. I bring a motion transfer venue that has a basis, one of the provisions for transferring venue, and if the trial court calls it wrong, if I'm just a little bit concerned, I think I can do this, but I'm not sure, and the trial court calls it wrong, the trial court, that trial is a nullity. It's got to be retried. But if I say, Judge, I'm not so sure about this, but I think I'm right, but oh, by the way, you don't have to do anything. I'm just going to stick in subparagraph B in my motion, and then I've protected this decision. There's no way it can be reversed. Why would a trial judge not sign that order? The other side could be screaming on their haunches, don't sign that order. And the judge says, well, we'll listen.
I would say judicial.
Correct, but I can make this bulletproof.
I would say judicial integrity, that that judges want to do the right thing. That's what I would say.
But why? Is that the wrong thing to do? How is that the wrong thing? I mean, the legislature has said, is where it ought to be tried, and why isn't that the same thing as saying, well, for the convenience of the parties, it ought to be tried there?
Well, it's absolutely, to me, it's amazing when you look back at the history of the 1983 amendments, which completely changed venue in Texas and moved from defendant's privilege to plaintiff has a right to choose. And this convenience provision that was added in 95 effectively can override that because it takes away that choice. And the interesting thing is, and the Corpus Christi Court treats it like this big exception and tries to qualify it, but if you look at what the legislature did, it puts it in the general rule, 15002, A are the plaintiff's choices, and B is this convenience transfer.
It doesn't in any way qualify that convenience transfer. It makes it part of the general rule and on a par.
It's not a big burden on the trial court. In this case, the trial court's order doesn't say what he's granting the venue on. So it would be no inconvenience to the trial judge to say, trial judge, if you want this to be a B transfer, just say so in the order.
And that in part answers Justice O'Neill's question of is it an abuse? And it's really not, because as a counsel or as litigants, you have to know the law. And the law right now is there's no review of that. So if you know there's no review of that, you have got to do your best in front of that trial court to convince them not to transfer it for convenience.
What's wrong with the 13th Court of Appeals decision that the way we will know whether it's a reviewable order or not is we want the trial judge to say so. And since the trial judge didn't say so, we're not going to presume that that's what he did and review it.
Because, Your Honor, they rewrite the venue statute. They legislate.
Well,
the legislature didn't put that requirement.
There's got to be a finding where the court finds. In other contexts, we have held that when a trial court's been required to find something, they've got to spell it out in an order somewhere. What's wrong with saying at least tell, say, in an order somewhere that you're specifically making a finding under B?
You can make that rule, but it's not reviewable by appeal. And to say what the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals said is reviewing it by appeal. There can be all sorts of rules, and the reality is it matters not what the burden is. It matters not what the burden is on the defendant. It matters not what findings the trial court has to make, because it's not reviewable by appeal.
Why is putting something in order saying, I have made these findings and that's the basis for my ruling, that doesn't make it reviewable? But it does make it clear that that's the basis for the transfer.
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor, when the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals, in effect, defeats the convenience transfer in an appellate review of that transfer by saying you don't have a finding, therefore it's not a convenience transfer.
But the statute says where the court finds.
Right.
Itself.
But it's totally discretionary.
But there's no finding. And why can't appellate court say there's got to be a finding before you get a transfer, a non-reviewable transfer?
Well, I will return to, I don't think, and I think that subsection C could not be any clearer, that you absolutely don't get to review it. And until the legislature changes that, or until the legislature puts some requirement in, there can be, because that qualifies a convenience transfer.
But you're not reviewing it.
You can't transfer unless
you're not reviewing,
you have an express finding.
Well, you're not reviewing the nature of the findings. You're not saying, you're not passing on the merits of the finding. You're just determining whether there were any findings. So even if they were clearly erroneous, it can't be reviewed under the statute. But I don't see why we can, as Justice Owen suggests, look at the order itself to see were their findings made, even if they're wrong, even if we disagree with them. If those findings are made, we can't review it. That's not a qualitative sort of review that the statute seems to prohibit. What would be wrong with that rule?
Well, the effect of it is, as in this case, to say you don't get your ground for transfer because after the fact we're going to make a rule that if it's not expressly stated, because there's this whole notion of implied finding. There's this whole notion, a long-standing principle in Texas practice in analogous situations like summary judgment orders, which are very precise about that is a practice
but
that is very narrowly defined, that says if you've got a general order, then the
reviewable
burden is on the other party to get the finding.
But those are reviewable. We can review all of those, and you'd have to agree that this is a bit of a different thing. It doesn't really fit those areas.
But you have the notion of findings are implied. Now, why are we going to change the rule for convenience transfers?
Because it's not reviewable. I mean, that's what's driving this whole decision-making in the Court of Appeals, is because it's not reviewable, we want to make sure the trial court
made
it clear
that it's reviewed.
No, you're not reviewing the merits. We want to make sure the trial court did act under that section.
Well, it becomes...
And that's not a review of the merits of the decision.
It becomes the merits if a procedure blocks your ability to transfer for convenience, which is left totally with the trial court to decide. And the other thing is, again, findings of fact have no relevance here because findings of fact only matter when you've got an appeal. The burden has always been on the losing party and on the appellant to get findings of fact. Otherwise, they're implied. So if you don't get those express findings, and that's another principle, long-standing principle in Texas jurisprudence that the Corpus Christi Court ignores, and it places the burden on the winning party, on the defendants, to get that express finding.
Not if
and
the
that
order...
turns general procedural principles on their head, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, not if the order expresses that the trial court ruled under that section, then there it wouldn't require findings.
Then you would say
either
the burden
or.
Was not on the plaintiff, because keep in mind there's 30 days plenary power over a transfer order in which plaintiff could have come in and said, boy, I'm worried about there's no appellate review, and you didn't make this finding, Your Honor, and I want you to either make the finding that it was transferred or say that it wasn't transferred. And that burden gets shifted, and that's very contrary to Texas practice. So what the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals did was make a certain set of procedural rules. First, to me, it rewrote the statute, because the statute does not require the trial court to state in its order. It simply says, it should find, and that is a guidance to what are the factors you should look to transfer for convenience. So to me, that opinion, it completely gets it wrong, and I was about to start by saying the most disturbing thing about that is if you look at the new annotation, Vernon's annotations to this subsection B and C, the single and only case cited is Garcia versus Garza. And to me, they get it wrong. They review a convenience transfer, and they rewrite the statute, and they also ignore two pretty basic principles about who the burden is on to get findings of fact and the notion of a general order that, you know, if any ground stated in the motion is meritorious, an appellant's got to defeat each of those grounds.
I would like to ask you about what we're reviewing. Assuming that we're going into the paragraph A of venue transfer, what is it we're reviewing? You mentioned how you measure that. Do you think our Wilson opinion and our Ruiz opinion are inconsistent, or do you?
No, I don't.
What's the difference between the two, or which one applies in this particular case? I think you argue that Ruiz applies in this case, except under Wilson, aren't we supposed to be measuring whether the Starr County was the county of proper venue before the transfer occurred?
I would disagree, Your Honor, and say you have to look at what Wilson was doing. And look at what Ruiz is interpreting section 15064B, which states the standard of review. That's the statutory construction of that section. Wilson is not construing 15064B. It is construing 15063(1). And what Wilson says is
there is an initial legal threshold for obtaining a transfer of venue under the 83 revamp of the venue statutes, and that is you must establish that because the general rule under the 83 amendments is plaintiff gets first choice of venue. And therefore, in order, defendant, for you to get a transfer, you have got to, as an initial legal proposition and burden under 1506.31, establish that venue is improper, that the venue plaintiff selected was improper. And that's a legal threshold.
That would be Starr County in this.
Right, in this, it would be Starr County. But the difference between this case and Wilson is that we did challenge. In Wilson, Parks and Wildlife walked in and said, hey, we want to transfer from Travis County, which was a county of proper venue. We want to transfer from Travis County over to Blanco, where the drownings occurred. They made no argument. You look at the Court of Appeals opinion, you look at the Supreme Court opinion, they made no argument whatsoever that Travis County was improper venue, because apparently they couldn't argue that, because the decisions about the flood warning system or whatever were made in Travis, so at that time it was any or a park occurring, and so venue was correct there. So, and you have to look at that first, and when you, I'm sorry, my time is up. All right, so you have to look at that first, and that's an initial legal determination. Now, what Ruiz says is you look at the trial court's, you know, the transfer, if it transfers venue or if it keeps venue, you look at venue where it takes place. That, you don't even reach Ruiz in Wilson, because in Wilson, let me back up a minute. Ruiz says, but we don't apply this deferential standard of review to a legal determination. And that's what you have in Wilson. They're two very different things. And Wilson doesn't say we're going to rewrite or redo what the court did in Ruiz. They don't change a thing about the Ruiz standard of review. They simply say, as an initial matter, you have to show venue's improper, and defendants did that.
Court is ready to hear an argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Richard C. Ford and Mr. Virgil Yonta will present argument for the respondent. Mr. C. Ford will open the first 10 minutes.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. The ancient Romans had a maxim that fortune favors audacity. The petitioners in this case have taken that maxim to its opposite. Extreme. If the court adopts the petitioner's scheme of how convenience transfers are to occur from now on, then all of the case law that this court has issued becomes simply moot, no possible use.
Their reading is plausible, but it would just, it's ambiguous and it would be bad policy, so we should read it some other way. Or do you think, is there something in the words of the statute that compels your reading?
I believe the words of the statute do compel an opposite reading to what the petitioners have stated. As one justice has stated here, the statute requires findings. The legislature specifically put into 15.002B a requirement that the court find three separate factors: the interests of justice and economic and personal hardship,
the lack of injustice of the transfer of the venue, and that the balance of interest of the parties predominate in favor of the transfer. In this case, the trial court made none of those findings.
But it did make an order. How do you get around the law that we do have on the books for a long time, that unless there's a request for findings, any implied findings that are supported by the evidence are deemed in favor of the order or the trial court's ruling?
I believe the cases and position taken by the petitioner in that regard regarding summary judgment are sui generis, and courts have found that the procedures used in summary judgment and implied findings are unique to those types of procedures. In this case, the legislature mandates, in our opinion,
well, in termination cases, it mandates that, let's say there's a bench trial, a parental termination case, it mandates certain findings, and the trial court says, I find that the parent's rights should be terminated. And if nobody asks for findings, and there's evidence supporting all of that, we'll uphold that judgment. Can you show me one area of the law where we don't imply findings in the absence of a request?
I think in this particular situation of the venue transfer, I think the legislature specifically states that you cannot imply findings because they state in the statute that the court must find or
well,
find.
That's my point. They say the same thing in parental termination. Parental termination statutes is there must be these findings, but we don't overturn a judgment for lack of those specific findings if they're implied.
Because the court has the ability to review the trial court's actions in those particular situations. This is unique, this venue transfer for convenience, or what some commentators have called county non-convenience transfers, is unique because if the trial court makes a finding that it is transferred for the convenience of the parties under the statute and finds the requisite three factors, then it is unreviewable by this court or any other court. And that's what makes it so outrageous in this particular situation, because it is true. There's no trial judge in his right mind who would not make a perfunctory finding of a convenience transfer from now on if all it takes is a simple notation by the stroke of a pen to prevent any type of review, much less reversal.
Well, I don't understand that. What's the difference between he signs a general order or he signs a specific order? No trial judge in his right mind is not going to make it unreviewable. He can do that very easily under your view of this statute. He can just say, I find A, B, C.
That's correct. However, conceding to counsel's point, judicial integrity, I believe, will prevent judges from arbitrarily making specific findings which they know have no basis in fact or in the evidence.
The argument
rather than making a simple stroke of a pen of a convenience transfer.
The argument that trial judges are only a little bit sleazy is difficult to understand. If a judge is motivated by wanting his order unreviewed, and all he has to do is find these three things, which are very general, you say that will be an impediment, but if he can just sign a general order, it won't be.
Well, what I say, Your Honor, is that the statute requires, the legislature requires the findings of those particular things in the evidence. Now, whether or not a judge will make those findings based upon no evidence is something
no one can control. But certainly, if a judge is simply going to put in their transfer for the convenience of the parties, or simply a general order doesn't even mention it, then certainly that's going to occur every time, and the plaintiffs inviolate a right to make a choice of first venue, which this court has upheld many times, simply disappears. Now, the 13th Court of Appeals, the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals, got it right in this particular situation. They created a bright-line test, to determine when there is a transfer for convenience, and that is when the trial court makes findings as mandated by the statute, or the evidence in the record supports the transfer for convenience. Now, the evidence in the record in this case,
I hope they said, and the evidence in the record needs to support.
And in that particular situation, the record in this case, and I think it's important that we look at the record, especially volume 3 of the reporter's record, pages 8 and 9, where the trial court in this particular situation asked counsel for the petitioner, the trial counsel, what his burden was at that point in time and what he was trying to prove. And at that point in time, trial counsel for the petitioner clearly stated that his burden was to deny the venue facts and to prove the venue facts of domicile or abode of the defendant. And that was it. There was no mention whatsoever in any part of the record, anywhere, about convenience transfer or any sort of transfer on the basis of the statute under 15.002B.
I remember the or now. It was the Court of Appeals said a venue order must expressly state that the cause is or is not transferred under B, or must make findings.
Yeah, I believe.
But they did not require it. It was the findings they didn't require. Or the record must contain express findings of fact.
Yes.
They said, either way, as long as the trial judge says, I'm doing this under 1502B, according to the Court of Appeals, that would be enough, without the findings.
I'm not quite sure that's the interpretation given, but, Your Honor, I do believe that there has to be some finding in the record, or in the order, or in request for findings of fact and conclusions of law, that the trial court transferred a case for convenience of the parties. And otherwise,
but even
again,
if we agree with you on that legal point, help me with the procedural point. In every other area of the law, a trial court should make findings and doesn't. And nobody objects to that. You don't raise your hand and say, Your Honor, you need to make express findings. We go ahead and deem findings in support of that order or judgment if it's supported by the record. So,
and again, Your Honor, in those cases, I believe, are distinguishable from this unique situation where there is no review. There is no possible review if a convenience transfer is made. No other court, no other judge gets to make a say and gets to weigh in upon the issue.
Is it also your position there's no evidence of any convenience in the parties at all?
I believe the record is devoid of any evidence of a convenience transfer in this particular situation. In fact, Your Honors, the petitioner didn't even plead the basis for a convenience transfer. This is an afterthought. They put it in alternatively, we like a transfer of convenience to the parties. They didn't even mention the statute's requirements and conditions for a convenience transfer, neither that they produce any type of proof as necessary to support a transfer that can be under the convenience provision of the statute. Again, Your Honor, the 13th Court of Appeals got it right. If the petitioner's position in this case is correct, well, then the exception swallows the rule. And as this court has held, when we have exceptions to the venue statute, they should be narrowly, strictly construed.
The petitioner says this is not an exception. This is part of the rule itself, part of the statute. It just has two pieces. It doesn't say except as to be. What's the answer to that?
Well, I believe it is an exception to the general statute that permissive venue, once established, once proven by prima facie proof, makes no other place proper. And in this case, if the respondent made a prima facie showing of proof of permissive venue, which we contend we did, then no other place can be a place of proper venue. That's what this court has held in several lines, and other courts in several lines of cases, the Wilson case, the Lewis case, Miranda Temple. Again, a convenience transfer is such a unique animal in this particular situation that it requires a strict compliance with the statute. In this case, there was no compliance with the statute at all. And therefore, the petitioner's position on this particular issue is wrong, and the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals position is correct.
Mr. Secor, do you agree with Ms. Calloway that the difference between Wilson case and Reeves case as to which county you're looking at to determine if it was a county proper venue depends on whether or not the defendant contested that Starr County, in this case, was a county proper venue? Her argument is, in Wilson, they looked to see if Travis County was a county proper venue because the defendant didn't contest that it was a county proper venue. But in Ruiz, the defendant contested that the county where they were was not a county proper venue, and so you look to the county where it was ultimately tried. Do you agree that that's the distinction between what county you're looking at, the proper venue between Wilson and Reeves?
No, Your Honor, I believe there is a dichotomy in how you judge a transfer order under traditional notions, not a convenience transfer, but say under Ruiz or under Wilson, as to whether or not you're looking at an order denying transfer of venue or an order granting transfer of venue. I think there is a dichotomy in the law in how you look on, for purposes of appeal and abuse of discretion, how you look at those particular situations. In this case, of course, we have a transferee, transferor court transferring a venue improperly, we suggest. And
so irrespective of the challenge, we're looking to see if Starr County was a county proper venue.
That is the law, yes, Your Honor, as this court has stated that you must review the entire record, including the trial record, which in this case we firmly believe proves that not only was a venue error committed, but that venue fraud was committed. As we stated in something that Mr. Yanta may want to address, as we stated in our brief, there's no question that this defendant driver admitted his residence in the place in which the respondent brought this action, and even if he had a dual residence, you're allowed to have a dual residence, and you're allowed to be sued in either of the residences that you have, as the case law demonstrates. For venue purposes, you can have dual residences, and in this particular situation, the defendant driver probably did have a dual residence. But the fact is that the respondent proved his prima facie burden of proof to prove that he satisfied his prima facie burden of proof that the defendant driver lived in the original place of suit, where suit was filed by the plaintiff.
Is that your burden, that you have to establish that, or you just have to have some evidence of Starr County being the county of Pompey?
I believe the standard is prima facie proof, but only if it is properly denied by the movement.
Even if the defendant comes in and shows that there's a question as to whether or not he lived in Starr County, you still satisfy that doesn't cut it.
That's right, Your Honor, and that's the Rosales case, Rosales versus HEB, wherein once the non-movement establishes prima facie proof of his permissive venue, well then that proof is not subject to rebuttal, impeachment, or attack unless the opposing evidence is of such an overwhelming nature that it completely destroys the prima facie proof of the non-movement. In this case, there's hardly any overwhelming evidence that this man lived solely in Hidalgo County. In fact, the evidence is overwhelming to the exact contrary, that he had a residence in Starr County where he maintained a home where his wife lived, where he built the home with his own hands, where he testified, or at least acknowledged, made a judicial admission to a magistrate there that he had a home when he was arrested for DWI. There's no question that the man had a dual residence and that venue was proper and permissive in Starr County. And once that was established, then no other place could have been a proper venue. And while I run out of time, I guess I'll let Mr. Johnson take the floor if there are no more questions.
Thank you, Johnson.
Chief Justice, may it please this honorable court. Assuming arguendo that petitioner in this case is correct regarding the liberal construction, if I might call it that, of the order, that presupposes, as Rule 299 of this court's Rules of Civil Procedure makes clear in the second to last sentence, that, quote, when supported by evidence, there is no evidence whatsoever of any of the three factors, in this case, being satisfied, even if their position is correct with respect to that.
They say that the accident occurred in Hidalgo County and the witnesses were all there. Why wouldn't that be similar?
Because, Your Honor, we would submit that that would require a leap of faith that the gentleman who built the house and had his residence in Starr County, and who 5 days after this very wreck to his own insurance adjuster t- told him he resided in Starr County, which, by the way, the record makes clear, pages 83 and 85 of the supplemental court's record, was never divulged until a year after the transfer was made. That would presuppose that the trial court even knew that it had sufficient facts to make that determination. That was not argued at the hearing to begin with. There was no record before the court. It's devoid of Rule 299. You cannot, even if they're correct, presume that the order supports the record.
But don't we have to look at the whole record now?
Precisely, and this court needs to look no further than the Wilson case because it is on all fours square, it's on point across the board. A transfer from a proper county chosen by the plaintiff to Blanco County, trial, and then reversal because of the mistake. Here, though, the trial court was never given the opportunity to have before him, the Honorable Alex Gabert, never knew about that statement taken 5 days after the wreck by the defendant itself, where he confirmed, I reside at Route whatever, Box 1013 of Rio Grande City. That's on an audio tape before the court in a record. In fact, I played it at the argument before the 13th court. He was deprived of that. At the very least, if the court chose to buy into this exception that swallows the rule, then the very least, under the authority of Ruiz versus Conoco, when court cites Rule 87, I think it's subsection C, the court at the very, if it's going to reverse, it should remand and allow Judge Gabert to have the benefit of the material that he never had. The record makes clear that February 2nd of 1999, my predecessor on this case as trial counsel then sent a request for disclosure. It wasn't until roughly a year later, long after, 8 to 10 months after the transfer, that the statement proclaiming his residence in Starr County, which suddenly was, all of a sudden became denied later, came to light. This case makes, the court, with respect to statutory construction, likewise, need look no further than the opinion of Wilson, where it articulates quite well the purpose or the method of reading the statute. I submit that if you follow Wilson from 8 years ago, you cannot help but reverse Wilson to sustain the petitioner's position clearly. Because what on earth does that last section of 1500 to mean if the petitioner's position is correct? It has no meaning whatsoever. Under Wilson, the court talks about it in plain import to you presume that the words are there for a reason from the legislature. You give it to plain import and you try to reconcile all statutes with one another, as the court is well aware. This case, unfortunately, because of its removed distance, geographic and procedurally, from the trial court level, unfortunately, points out, in my humble opinion, a problem with this court having to set policy and yet being so far insulated from the facts.
Let me make sure I understand. The Starr County Court did know that the accident occurred in Hidalgo County and that the witnesses primarily were in Hidalgo County.
Not that the witnesses were. It's undisputed that if plaintiff had wanted to, we could have filed suit.
No, I mean, but what evidence was there in front of the trial court about the convenience of the parties? The trial court did know that the accident was in Hidalgo County.
That's it. Zero evidence with respect to any of the three required findings under 15.002.
Z.
Did the trial court know that the plaintiffs lived in Hidalgo County?
That's undisputed, yes, Your Honor.
Did the trial court know that J&R had its principal place of business in Hidalgo County?
I believe so, but we've not disputed that. We chose the proper venue. We were robbed of the proper venue. And it's this court's, it should be this court's opinion to sustain or uphold the Corpus Christi 13th Court of Appeals opinion for which we undo pray.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, counsel is absolutely incorrect to say that there's zero evidence of a convenience transfer.
What is it? What
plaintiff's own petition said that at that time there were two plaintiffs. Plaintiffs reside here. J&R's motion to transfer venue says our principal place of business here. No one ever disputed that. Undisputedly, the accident took place there. There is a dispute about Mr. Garza's residence. The simple fact is he didn't change his driver's license when he moved, and how many of us have probably done the same thing, and that brings a lot of confusion. His deposition, which was put before the trial court before the transfer for venue, explains his entire residence situation, that he had, yes, he had a house in Rio Grande City, that's where he had lived, that's when he got his driver's license, and all that driver's license is proof of is that, yes, that was his address at the time he obtained it.
For venue, we were robbed of the proper venue. And it's this court's, it should be this court's opinion to sustain or uphold the Corpus Christi 13th Court of Appeals opinion for which we humbly pray.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, counsel is absolutely incorrect to say that there's zero evidence of a convenience transfer.
What is it?
Plaintiff's own petition said that at that time there were two plaintiffs. Plaintiffs reside here. J&R's motion to transfer venue says our principal place of business here. No one ever disputed that. Undisputedly, the accident took place there. There is a dispute about Mr. Garza's residence. The simple fact is he didn't change his driver's license when he moved, and how many of us have probably done the same thing, and that brings a lot of confusion. His deposition, which was put before the trial court before the transfer for venue, explains his entire residence situation, that he had, yes, he had a house in Rio Grande City, that's where he had lived, that's when he got his driver's license, and all that driver's license is proof of is that, yes, that was his address at the time he obtained it. He and his wife were separated. He had been in Hidalgo County for 2.5 years prior to the accident, still resided there at the time of the venue hearing, etc. There is evidence from which to imply findings. Also,
you agree there's no evidence at all in the record that would show that the company would be economically hurt by trying the case and starting?
Other than Mr. Garza's deposition shows that he is a totally uneducated person who lives and keeps livestock in Hidalgo County and has to take care of that livestock. So for him to have to go to Star, when he visits his family, he goes on the weekend, doesn't spend the night, goes there, sees his children, and comes back. I think that you can infer from that that there would be a hardship to Mr. Garza.
There was evidence in the record at the hearing on those elements that would
be. The deposition was attached to plaintiff's own response to the motion to transfer venue. So, yes, Your Honor, that was before the court when it made its decision to transfer venue.
Can the implying findings in support of a judgment that requires a review of the record produce the thing you complain about? You say, by that very nature, you're having an appellate review of the record that you're not. So
yes,
implied findings can't work under your position. Implied
findings you don't ever get to them. It's what I started out saying.
It is, as the 13th Court said, either the court says it's relying on B, or it says these findings, and if it does neither one of those, we have no way of knowing whether it did that, and we certainly can't look at the record to imply findings because we're not permitted to do so anyway.
But what the statute says is where the court finds. If the legislature had wanted to mandate that the court must make findings, it could have said the court shall find in order to transfer for convenience. I think saying where the trial court finds is a directory to say here are the factors you ought to consider, trial court, and oh, by the way, your decision's totally discretionary and without any sort of review.
if I may move on in the event that I must establish the propriety of the transfer of venue under 15002A, if I may move back to that and address Justice Enoch's question to Mr. Secord. Mr. Secord's answer with regard to Wilson and Ruiz, well, they're a dichotomy. You apply Wilson to refusals to transfer, is that right? No, transfers, and Ruiz to the other. That absolutely cannot be so. Just absolutely cannot be so. If you look, there is one statute of review provision, and that's 15064B, and it says if venue was improper in determining whether venue was improper. Whether venue is proper or not means where venue ultimately resided. If the legislature had wished this court to entertain a review of whether plaintiff's choice of venue was correct, it would have said so. If it wanted two standards of review, one for denials, and I'm sorry, my time is up.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument. In the second pause, the court will take a few seconds.
All rise.